Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And with me today, I've got two guys from Spectre, an agency in the Netherlands, and they've done some amazing work. And we're going to talk later on about one particular show that I'm interested in called Freshers. But we'll start off by letting the guys introduce themselves. Hello.
Hey.
So, Joris, just say who you are and then maybe introduce Tim.
Hi, my name is Joris Huber. That's a very difficult name to pronounce in English or in any other country language. But I studied directing at the Dutch Film School here in Amsterdam, and I started to build an interest in transmedia and in other ways to tell stories and digital storytelling from 2006. And I met Tim. He's an actor from the drama school in Arnhem, and we worked together and founded Spectre like 3 or 4 years ago.
Four
years. This is Tim.
Yeah, I'm Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Joris. Hey. No, we're in the same space. But when I met Joris, I was just an actor. And I was a little bit depressed about the working field I was entering, because I was, my teachers were from the time that theater was the media form on the world. Everybody had some special and nice clothes to wear, and everybody was excited. And well, the world I entered was not really like that anymore. There was a lot of television and not a lot of theater, or not a lot of respect for theater, maybe, or for art in particular. We had a very strange development the last years, because art in the Netherlands is, well, it's a discussion. It's a big discussion, and we lost a lot of cut downs. Yeah, a lot of cut downs. And in that time, we grew with our brilliant transmedia ideas.
So what kind of agent? How would you describe Spectre?
Storytellers.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are born storytellers. And I mean, storytelling is kind of a buzzword here over the world, I think. But I think it comes down to love for stories and for moving people. That's basically my main motivation. Moving and with transmedia, we can also physically move people, and that's what we love about transmedia.
So tell us a little bit. Let's get into the work you did for Freshers, because that's got everything. It's got an alternate reality game. It's got live action, a mobile app, all kinds of things. So tell us how it all began, and maybe you can explain to people what it is.
Well, this is Tim speaking again. I don't know if my voice is recognizable. The thing was, I was in the in the series as an actor, and the first season, it's about fresheners for a Dutch television network called BNN. The first season, there was a lot of attention on through digital ways. So every episode was on air 1 week before it was on television. And the viewers' numbers were incredible. So it was even sometimes better watched a week before online than it was on television. So,
and was this on YouTube or on the network's sort of private channel?
On the network's private channel.
Right.
And then directly after the episode on television, there was the new episode online. So it was a big conversion from TV to online. And what you see in the market we work in, everybody's very skeptical, and it takes a lot of nerve for a lot of organizations to do transmedia projects, because there are so many different companies involved, and you have to direct all those companies, and that's terrible, because everybody has got his own motivation. And I had a very good possibility, because I could talk to the network boss as an actor and tell him we really should do this. And then the first year, he said, what? He said, and we said, no, we have to create the Freshner Society. Well,
the fraternity.
The fraternity, yeah. We have to make it real. And he said, no, we're not doing that because we make television. And then we said, yeah, and that's your problem because that's why you're gone in 4 years. So just listen to us and do this. And then he said, well, I like you because you've got such a big mouth. And I don't want to stop you, but I can't help you either. So you got our support. Do your thing. And then that year we started with a pilot on Facebook, and I think yours can explain a bit about that.
Yeah, we looked around for another company to work with us on this, and we found Elastic. It's an interaction design company, and together with them we created a Facebook app. And we created some live events to create this real fraternity. That was the main idea, to really give the fans a possibility to become a member of this fraternity and become a fresher themselves. So we created.
And this was for season two.
Season two, yeah. So we did it on no budget. I mean, we paid it ourselves, and
it was our own budget. It was almost the end.
Yeah, it was like all or nothing. But what we found out that we got fans, we got people really from all over the Netherlands. They came to Amsterdam to be with us and to celebrate this fictional fraternity. So that was for us the moment that we saw it work, and that there was magic and that we could move people.
Yeah. So
what sort of live event did you invite them to?
What we just did was we created the room where the students met. So you could come there as a member of the fraternity and meet the characters out of the series. And as characters, we just made the story go on. So we had this character doing a monologue because his time as a president president started, and a lot of time they formed this disputes.
I don't know. It's in the case video.
Okay.
The subsections.
Yeah, subsections. So we had one big subsection, and they wanted to create a party, a big party to end the season with. And this party was so unbelievably successful, and we had different newspapers and magazines and television shows, and it was mentioned everywhere. Not only positive, because we had a little bit problem with police and stuff.
It's always good for publicity.
It was very good for publicity. Yes, and we were at that moment understood that we had to direct what happened and not only create on beforehand. So the transmedia success was mainly because we reacted on what happened. And
right.
And then the network was so happy with the result, not with the police and stuff. But the funny thing is that story about that party became a feature film. So there was a script based on that experience. So you really saw the influence of the fans creating a whole storyline from out of their imagination for the story world. And you saw the makers respond on that. And when there was the first season, we said to the network, okay, now we really have to take the leap, or how do you say that, make it big and make it mobile. So then we developed a mobile app for iPhone and Android, and people could became a member of the fraternity by doing this
hazing process.
20 minutes, and very terrible to do, but one out of three people, viewers of the series, did it, and more than half of them became an active member. So the conversion was brilliant. So the biggest frustration we have about this whole project is that we didn't start from season one, because if we could build a fraternity within television episodes about it, and with an app. We had like 50,000 members within a couple of weeks. So if we had the time to develop it, how do you say, ongoing with the seasons, yeah, it's unbelievable how big you can make this niche, because it's a niche. The viewers are, and the network too, it's a niche of the Dutch broadcasters palette.
But I mean, on anybody's, I mean, if you look at the stats, I mean, like 86,000 downloads and so on, I mean,
yeah,
it's a big success, whatever. You know, whatever you say about it being a niche or otherwise, it's still, you know, you've got that fantastic
now,
thing going.
I think what was one of the success things, or one of the reasons it became a success, was that we didn't only connect with the anecdotes, so the story of the story, the personages, but we really created a world. So
yeah,
everybody who likes that world wanted to be a part of that world. So we didn't only serve the viewers of the series, but we also brought new series to the television episodes. You know, because, yeah, some people just really wanted to be part of the story world.
And presumably on for season three, after the success of season two, they gave you a budget.
Yeah, we had a budget, but it was still...
Yeah, we still had to search for the budget ourselves. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how the system in Britain works, but there, the Dutch, the public broadcasters here in the Netherlands, they normally they don't give out money to other parties to build these kind of transmedia projects. So we had to find the money ourselves, but we also got some from the NPO, that's the Dutch BBC.
So were they kind of like, so they wanted it, but they didn't want to finance it. Like, were they like skeptical or what?
No. They just don't have the power to do.
I think they are.
Yes.
It's legislation here.
They have to make television.
Okay.
You know, the commercial networks don't want the public networks to become big in the online world too. So there's a lot of regulations
to prevent them from, okay, to subsidize, you know.
But we got a lot of subsidies in the Netherlands, you know, and. That's one of the biggest reasons that we could make this, because you have to take a lot of risks. So a commercial-driven organization, I think, would never have chosen the things we choose while making this. And still, that was part of the success. So
yeah, but when I look at it, it looks fantastically commercial. I mean,
yes.
It doesn't look like something... I mean, I don't mean this in a disparagement. It doesn't look arty, as in, like, inaccessible. I mean, it looks fantastically accessible that any, like, teenager would go for it.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that's the reason that, because we call ourselves storytellers, but now slowly, or not slowly, very fast, we're, like, drawn in the marketing world. Because what we find very interesting is conversion. So we want as many people as possible to make every step further and deeper in the experience, and that's all about moving people, trying to add through game mechanics and storytelling, trying to get them further in their experience and make them more active, and use them more as ambassadors and make them responsible and make them co-producers.
Like, thinking about the creative process, when, after the success of season two, you would have learned, you know, a little bit about what people were, you know, enjoying the most and what, and so on. And so how did you approach season three? Like, how did you know which, you know, elements to include and what not to include and when to time them?
Yeah, what we did was we created, first we started like with this business modeling group. So we had all the organizations that were part of the product. So we had the producer, the network, the communications department of the network, our company, the tech company, and we just sat there and tried to get all the goals and all the motivations together in one project. That was the beginning. So it was really, how do we work? Who is leading? And the second phase we did was we selected the 15 most active players of season 2, and we spoke with them a lot of times. What do you want? What do you miss last year? What do you want now? What is your dream? And we found out that people want to connect with each other and want to be responsible for something. So the development or the gameplay of the third season app was really about people forming
subsections.
Yeah, I was looking to yours. Sorry about my English. For subsections and make that subsections less or more important in the bigger picture. So that was the main reason for people to spread. So when they had a subsection, they could ask a friend, "Do you want to be part of my subsection?" That worked really, really well. And that was one of the things that we found out by talking to the players of the second season.
That's interesting. I think in English it would be faction.
Faction.
Yeah.
Like in, I think in university terms, it might be called a hall.
A hall.
So it's like, you know, like you've got three different, like Harry Potter, you've got three different halls.
Yeah.
You decide which one you're going to be part of.
Yeah. So.
And how did people choose? Did you have some kind of like personality test, or did they just say, "Oh, I like the logo, and I'm going to join that one"?
And
there was this women's hall, and there was, I mean, there was this Ithaca. Ithaca was the main characters all were in the Ithaca hall, so everybody wanted to go into Ithaca.
Right.
And there was this girls' hall. That was the most popular, I think.
The 4,000 members or something. The biggest hall of all the students.
And was that because? But I mean, did you allow men in the girls' hall as well?
Yeah.
I've never spoke about halls so long. But the funny thing is that we had all these game mechanics that you could your status could improve, and you there were all these different badges you could earn. And at some point, there were even there was a lot of discussions about fictional badges they made up themselves. So when you threw your phone as a pancake in the air, then you got that. No, it was very funny because they made up more badges than we did. And there was a very leading role for two side characters from the series. So they had. They had a small part in the TV series.
Yeah, they were only in the first and then the last episodes.
Yeah,
there were these two freshers, and in the we decided to use them in the app as a main character. So one of the characters is a guy, and he finds out that there's this. Huge secret society behind the fraternity, and he tries to
infiltrate.
To win the heart of this girl. So this was a story that was told through videos and through blogs on the app.
Yeah, we were trying to connect also with all the people who hate fraternities and make the most important ambassadors for our project, and that really worked because everywhere where somebody said something negative about the series, we directly reacted from out of the characters. One was very on your hands, telling you how true you are. Because the fraternity is one big, terrible organization with rich kids without values, and on the other hand, directly everybody from out of our fictive, you know, all the members would start terrorize you online, like, you shut up, you fool, you don't know anything. And so we had a lot of discussions, and it all led to our application, of course. But the very interesting question you said that you saw the commercial value of the application, that was something we really couldn't explore here, because of the system we have in the Netherlands, where we use subsidies to make the projects for the public broadcasters. We're not able to do whatever commercial thing with it, because, you know, it's public money, so nobody can earn money by using this product.
Right.
And so the commercial value of the app we built is still there. We really see it, and our biggest wish is to do it all over again, and then not as a pitch and a pilot, etc., but as one format, a television series with an application, or it can be anything, you know. It can even be a football, a soccer club, or football club, what I say. You're so famous. I don't know, even a bank. It's so unbelievable what you can do if you give the people a voice and connect them by game mechanics in this world. It's unbelievable how far they go.
And what sort of mechanics were there? Was it all user-generated content and curated, you know, having to curate the stuff they uploaded, or how did it work?
Now, what we did was we tried to make it a healthy organization. So there was this chat room, and where they could make their own, how do you call it, themes, or where they could chat about. And we had this people who were very active, and we sent them an email, and we said, listen, you're like this protector of the values of Mercury, was the name of the fraternity, and we want you to protect it. And we had the film premiere, and we convinced the producer to give us 150 tickets for the premiere. So what we did was we gave the most active members a very big responsibility, like if somebody's using bad words and, you know, misbehaving, please report him to us. And from now on, you get the title Mercury Control Detective 4. Right? And as a reward, he got a ticket for the premiere. So this was on two sides. It was very interesting because on one side, the people made the product, because we didn't have the budget to use this control functions or whatever. So we had a big problem if people would misbehave. And on the other hand, the film premiere was bigger than ever on social media, because instead of 150 not so famous people, there were like 150 very enthusiastic and active members of our fraternity on the film premiere evening. So this was one of the game mechanics we used
to be
a part of that big party. Film premiere, and it was also, the story ended there, because the movie was about a party that really
really
go crazy, just like it happened a year before, but then a little bit more dramatic, of course. On behalf of the police, the fraternity was closed after that terrible night. So this was also the moment that the application was closed. And it was funny because the community didn't want to stop, so they were mad and trying to. They were all posting like rest in peace memorials on social, like the best fraternity ever stopping. And that was. I think that when we say tomorrow, we're coming with a fourth season. There are like 50,000 of them are like back in business.
yeah, because like, was it like a commercial necessity to shut it down because it costs money to keep it running?
Yeah,
is that
right? Yeah, and we couldn't exploit it commercially, so we had to close it.
There was no
the subsidy money, and there was also not the possibility to explode. Yeah. So
yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, so we said to each other, okay, this is brilliant, but we can do this again. It's not specifically this project that it. We learn a lot of it, and this series was brilliant. So if we can make this somewhere else, let's do it. But otherwise, it costs too much effort to try to get it rolling
again.
Yeah.
So do you think there'll be another one for season 4?
Well,
there's no season 4, right?
No, there's no season 4. And when you ask me, I think that another country should make this. And then with the whole multimedia campaigning, totally implement it from season 1. Because then you can really, really make a difference. And here in Holland, it's just too difficult to get money for the fourth season, I think, because it's a niche.
And the thing is as well, like, it's in Dutch language, so very few people outside of the Netherlands would have likely to have seen it. And it's a universal theme, so it could very well travel overseas.
Yeah.
To English.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So if you wanna, if you know any interested people, I think it's very. We've never been in a fraternity or in halls or whatever, but this world is very mystical and it's very intriguing. So it's also intriguing in the UK or in the States or whatever, wherever. So I think it is a really great possibility to make it somewhere else.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really think so. And I think it's even bigger in some countries.
Well, it's just going back to the actors that were involved in it, did they get paid? Was there any sort of legal issues with the acting unions or anything?
Well, everybody got paid, but it wasn't much. So I think the reason that we could do this was also because I was a part of the creative team of the series. So I could translate it to my acting colleagues. So the first season, they invested a lot of time and energy to make it something. And they were also very skeptical about, like, hey, I'm an actor, I make drama series, and now I have to talk to this bunch of drunk people. Is this my job? And I said, no, it's what's your job? You want to create this this world where people lose themselves a little bit. And so we needed that first year of piloting also to learn actors how to behave in this kind of multimedia, transmedia projects.
Because did you have to give, how much of it was scripted for the stuff they did for the live performances, for example?
No.
I think we made a lot of videos, and they were all scripted, but all the live events were some...
Yeah, we had like a scene, and then we said, okay, we want this to happen, and the rest of the time just make fun.
Just improvise
make
it happen.
Yeah, and I think this is the perfect way to create a transmedia story, because you have to react, you have to respond. People are not like zombies on a red chair watching and waiting. They want to participate. So you have to give a lot of freedom. And I think the plan, the script of the project before we started, we had a daily or every hour we knew what we were doing on Twitter, Facebook, etc. But just because we made it, we had all the possibilities to react on what people did. So one example, we found out that communicating with the people from out of the Senate, so the leading organization of the fraternity, was very important. We didn't have a budget to make videos. So what we used was like this photo
collage.
And we made pictures of what happened that week in the news and also in the fraternity and in the television series. And we created a voiceover, very epic. This week, my fraternity members, this and this happened and that and that. And it was very easy to make. We had a stagiaire making it. an intern, we call it a stagiaire, yeah. Thank you, you're for translating. And we could do this 2 times a week. So we had an ongoing conversation through the Senate, and people loved it. If we said a photo collage thing, we said we got a new competition, do this on Twitter and you can earn a place in this commission or that commission.
and win tickets
for the film premiere, then we reached everybody. And this was not in the plan. This was not originally in the plan. And also not in the budget.
Right. It sounds amazing, though. It's good that you had the flexibility to react.
What I love most. It's like running a show, running a live theater, and pitching the buttons and stuff, and make it more exciting the experience for the viewers, and also make it personal for these participants.
So, having, got this amazing experience now, how have you applied this into the other projects that you've been working on? How does that translate into something that you might do for a brand, for example?
We're still a startup. We're 4 years. We're working on this dream we have together. And this is the second very important portfolio project. So what happened... a lot of marketing awards selected us with this project for, I don't know, which strange kind of prize they give awards about movement creating and marketing business
digital
of the year,
marketing.
Innovative, blah, 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 Wonder Transmedia, blah, blah, blah. But that was a way to get on the right desk with big companies. To speak about their people, the people they want to serve and reach and activate. And so the game mechanics we used in this project, together with the experience and the nice feeling of having a winner, gave us the possibility to start a lot of beautiful projects with companies.
Very good. Really good. That's fantastic, guys. It's been, fantastic talking to you. It's, I think it's quite inspirational. On the show notes, I'll include the video as well, because that's got a lot of the metrics.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People can get an idea of the style of young people going barmy with lots of beer. And it's quite good. So where should people look you up?
Well, we're always available in Amsterdam for a cup of coffee, but also you can find us on www.spectre.nl, and there we have some more projects we are working on or have worked on.
Yeah, we're launching a very nice project in November, I guess.
Yeah, November, October. We have two new projects.
Are you allowed to speak about them now?
The one is called Swartshield. It's an online web-based transmedia experience.
Blah, 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 blah. It's fun.
And it's fun. We started the development last year, and our inspiration was Aaron Swartz. I don't know if you know him, but he... He committed suicide last year because he had some. Well, he was prosecuted by the American by the FBI and the state, I think, because he had broken into the database of MIT.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, he's an information activist. Huh?
That's and right, he gave it away, didn't he?
Yeah, he also founded Reddit, co-founded Reddit. And we want to make a story about that domain, that story world of hackers and activists. And,
So is it like an alternate reality game? Or?
No, it's I think it's almost 90% online, an online game. But it's kind of an escape room kind of game, ARG, but online.
So it's really interesting.
And there's also this. There's this. We have this dream to make a community, but I don't think it will work for this project now. So, hey, you were talking about lessons learned, and it's also a project where we want to see how we can direct the uses of this game. So there are, we want to track them and see how we can make it a personal experience, and maybe even. Call them for real and make it more real.
Yeah, show them how it is to be a hacker in some way.
Yeah.
You're going to arrest them.
It's a bit like that.
We want to create an experience where you are being chased by a large organization like the NSA.
But the funny thing is, a lot of people are very, very scared about their privacy online. And of course, it's very good that they are. But on the other hand, it's not very good that they are, because it's not good for you to be afraid all the time. So what we tried to do was create some consciousness.
Yeah, way to
awareness. On the other, from the other side, just from the hackers who are getting all this private information in. So it has a double function. Creating a discussion that's already there, and on the other hand, try to make fun with things people are very afraid of.
Very interesting. And is there a project sponsor for it? Is it somebody?
Yeah, it's again, this is subsidies.
Subsidized by the Dutch Media Fund and
NLNet
and a fund called Democracy and Media.
Okay. And how many people have worked on the? How many people on the team? Like say. On the freshers one and now on this one?
From Spectre, I think we work, we have a team of about 10 people and we're all from or art or from theater or from film or programming or interaction design. And we also work with, we need and we love to work together with other companies. So co-creation is, it's in our DNA, and for freshers, I don't know how many people in the end were working on the project, but it's
I would say 30
or 40 people.
Wow.
And if you see the budget, you will laugh. and I cried. No, it's
it's like a euro each or something.
A
bit more, but no, it was we would give up a lot of beautiful products we're making now if we could build this Mercury's somewhere else. So this is my last time that I'm telling the same thing. If somebody ever hears this with a bit of feeling for success and drama, then do this.
There you go. It's been like a message in a bottle that we're going to cast out into the sea, the internet.
That's what we love.
Maybe it'll pop up again in November, like it'll be another project.
Okay, yeah,
probably. Oh, and I've got this TV format. A character pops up with it. Guys, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
And see you soon.